Welcome to another edition of Haunted Orange's Paranormal Podcast. Today, you're with Ernie Alonzo and our co-host, Marlo Scott. We are very happy to have on our show Miss Lorraine Warren. Together with her late husband, Ed Warren, they were perhaps the earliest of the original ghost hunters, investigating well over 10,000 hauntings, not only across the U.S., but around the world. Lorraine is a noted clairvoyant, author, lecturer, and TV personality with regular appearances on shows like A&E's Paranormal State and Discovery Channel's A Haunting. Lorraine and her husband Ed were also the lead investigators on such high-profile cases as the Amityville Horror and the Smurl Haunting. Lorraine, thank you so much for joining us on our Paranormal Podcast for the second time.
You're more than welcome. I look forward to being on with
you. It's a pleasure having you back. Since the last time we spoke, you were finishing up a few episodes of Paranormal State. Around January, sometime in January, Ryan Buell, the lead investigator on the show, revealed on his personal blog that Paranormal State will in fact be ending for the members to pursue other things. Now, is that correct, or is there,
Well, there were health issues with Ryan. With Ryan. There were health issues with him. And it was sad. It was really sad that it went under the way that it did. And I don't think anybody really has the answers for why that happened the way it did. I don't have the answers. I don't think Ryan has the answers. I don't think any of us do. It just fell apart at the seams.
Now, and, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but you know, it was wonderful. I enjoyed it. We all enjoyed it. It was very tiring sometimes because we'd be up extremely late at night and then having early morning calls and for airports and everything. But we loved what we were doing. We really loved doing it. I did, and he did.
Now, Lorraine, was Ryan's illness attributed to anything that was going on any of the cases?
It was a sheer exhaustion.
Okay.
It was sheer exhaustion with Ryan, yes. But it wasn't an illness. It was, you know, just total exhaustion.
Yeah.
And it's easy to have that happen.
You know, Lorraine, it makes me wonder, do you ever come across any seasoned investigators who deal primarily with the demonic cases or negative entities that later find themselves needing psychotherapy because of the cases they deal with?
If I did, it would be people that lack faith and shouldn't be investigating that type of that form of the research.
I guess that kind of goes into the next question. Anybody who is seriously thinking about being involved in the paranormal, do you feel that they need some type of a faith or strong belief put in place or some kind of ethic code that they can rely on to strengthen them going into something like this?
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely. You can't work with the demonic, with investigating the demonic and talking about the cases, and you yourself don't have faith. No. In fact, we always bless ourselves. We always say our prayers before we go in on these investigations, whether I'm doing it with Ryan or whether I'm doing it with other researchers, whether I'm doing it with Tony, my son-in-law, who works with me. No matter what, you have to take your spiritual protection when you are doing this work.
I guess that also comes into play. When you're walking into a situation, you really don't know what it is you're walking into, whether it be human spirit or ghost or something that perhaps is not even human.
Well, you interview a family, say, individual in the family would make contact with you and tell you the type of phenomena that's going on. You don't go in without a background.
I see.
Otherwise, you don't know how to protect yourself. There are so many ways, but then there's times that people leave out things that they think maybe they'll think we're crazy if we say something like this. Maybe they'll think we're exaggerating if we say something like this.
So they'll hold things back in just out of the fear that you think they'll be making this stuff up.
Yeah. Well, not making it up, but people, you know, they don't understand. A lot of people just don't understand what is going on. Really, what is going on in their lives? There's a family right now, and that the daughter. It started with the daughter. The daughter was in puberty. Now, most people don't realize that when a person is in puberty, and particularly a girl, then it's, I don't know, there's like a law of attraction for people like that. Not in every case, but in this particular case that I'm working on, it started with the scratching in her bedroom, and then it started with the bed moving and things of this nature. So then she decided she was going to not sleep in her bedroom, but sleep on the couch in the living room. That was worse. And then she wound up going into her mother's room. So I told them what to do, what precautions to take, and to see if their clergy would be willing to go in and bless the house, and then get back to me after that to see if that can helpfully, you know, bring it to closure. Not always it can't.
Now, Lorraine,
because there are people, especially young children, like this 13-year-old girl, and they open doors, you know, and they tell the other kids about it and like that, and they give recognition. And you can't do that. So there's many reasons. There's many reasons for that, what to do and how to do it.
Now, Lorraine, it's almost, we're getting close to October. We're venturing into my favorite time of the year, the fall season, Halloween, of course. And, you know, things are getting really busy for us here at Haunted Orange. And it's the time of year when people start, of course, thinking more about the paranormal and ghosts and, you know, wanting to go on ghost tours and getting involved in ghost meetup groups. And and then plus all of the craze with the paranormal TV shows over the past few years. It's really something that I really don't think it's a fad. I think it's here to stay. And what I wanted to talk about in this show is I wanted to focus a bit on the dangers of the paranormal, in particular in investigations.
Well, I'm not in favor of a lot of the paranormal shows that are on the air. I don't feel that. I think what they are doing is sometimes fool. You know, it's really foolish what they are doing. They're not really learned in the area. Some of them, they just don't have faith, and they're, you know, I don't want to pinpoint certain shows, but where they'll say, you know.
Okay, I think I know who you're talking about there, Lorraine.
Yes, that is crazy. That is, you know, that's making people want to, thinking, oh my God, what's going on? What's happening? And I don't really think it's good to watch some of these shows on TV.
Now, what percentage, just an estimate, of hauntings would you attribute to folks' direct involvement in seeking out paranormal through investigations? Let's say people who are over overexcited, I guess, about getting involved in the paranormal and start doing investigations of their own or get involved with groups, what percentage of hauntings would you say come out of those types of interactions?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of them people that they're just in it for the thrill.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in it for helping people.
Yeah.
And they just want the thrill of things like this. But that is not how we have ever worked. You know, we're called by families to go in, you know, to their home to see if we can bring closure to the house. And closure is usually where the clergy and get involved. The thing right now is we're running into so many cases that, you ask about their religion. Mm-hmm. We're Christians,
okay.
Don't they? We're Christians. And you find out that there's children in the house that aren't even baptized.
Okay.
That is dangerous. That is very, very dangerous if you are having anything of a paranormal nature mm-hmm. occur in your home. And Ouija boards are the worst.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the worst thing. Anybody that has a Ouija board, this is what I suggest. You dig a hole, you bury it. If you're of Christian faith, you put holy water in the sign of the cross on that dirt, and you don't bury it on your property. You go out in the woods someplace to bury it. And but it's I can't tell you how many people are that we were called into homes. It's terrible.
So you've seen hundreds of cases that it started off with the use of a Ouija board, you're saying?
So many that for a percentage, I'd say 75.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's
pretty high. You know, Lorraine, this kind of question has come to mind here, talking about people and things in their home. And, and it's maybe from the shows I have seen, but I understand that many times people develop relationships with the spirits in their homes and they learn to coexist and set boundaries. But what happens with a person who develops a relationship with a negative energy and doesn't want to let go of that relationship?
Mm-hmm. You're going to have a lot of trouble. You should not have any relationship, whether you think it's a human spirit or if it is an inhuman spirit, because the more energy that it gains, the more troubles you're going to be in.
Mm.
What is your advice to have conversation with somebody in a home that you find yourself a little bit taken back, this person's attitude towards what's going on in their own home? They ask for help, and yet, do they really want it?
Well, you talk to them on the phone. I always interview on the phone. My son-in-law and I would follow the pattern that Ed and I followed for years, and we always interview them on the phone before we go to the house, find out how many people are in the house, find out what exactly is going on in the house, and then go there. But I never would agree to anybody feeling that they want to communicate and actually have conversations with the spirits. No, and you can't give recognition to that extent. You're going to be in trouble. You're going to bite something in. If you take it full-heartedly, like the Ouija board or the people that we have a ghost, but we don't mind because, you know, it's not causing us any harm. Get rid of it. Have somebody come, the clergy come, and bless the house and for the spirit to You don't want to have something like that going on in your house. For one thing, most people don't understand, is it a human spirit or is it an inhuman spirit?
Right, so the best policy would be no ghost, period.
No ghost, period. Yes. Yes.
Now, Lorraine, how real is the notion of ghost or spirits following you home?
Very strong. Very, very strong. That's why when you leave home, as Christians, you bless yourself before you go back in your house again, and you command in the name of Jesus Christ what is there to leave and go back to where it came from. Because, yes, they can follow you home. They can definitely follow you home.
So what do you do for protection when you go on any type of investigation? Is there something that you follow before and after your investigations? Now you kind of say what you do at the end.
Yes, you say your prayers and you know, ask for God's protection before you even go in the house.
Now, Lorraine, what are some of the things that you look for when you are in an investigation that would kind of lend itself to say that this haunting is of a diabolic nature?
Oh, I know that right away.
And are you just able to sense?
Because I can discern.
Okay. And so what does that mean for us? Like when you say you can discern, what type of feelings do you get? Or can you describe that, what you feel?
Well, psychically, I can discern. That started out right in the very beginning. Even my own husband couldn't imagine that I would be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He would bring other people in. In fact, I'll tell you one experience where he took me into this house, and he had this psychic person that was with her. She was very good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was very good. And we were sitting at a kitchen table, and there was a woman, and her neighbor was sitting next to her, and that was and just Ed and I and this woman, this psychic person. And we started talking, and she said something, this person, and I said, "That's wrong." And Ed looked at me, you know, so surprised. I said, "Who is the figure that has this dark garment on that's standing in the doorway?" And the woman started to cry. Her husband was a judge, and he had, you know, like what he would be wearing. And I said, "Your husband is very concerned about you because I understand that you have some relative that's living here that's being very abusive to you." And she cried, and it was her son-in-law.
Mm.
It was a scary kind of a thing, truthfully. And but there's so many factors. There really is. You know, when my son-in-law put together these programs like that we're doing, we have people come to the house. There's small groups of people, and it's a warnology is what we call it.
Warnology, right?
And we show them all of this, the film of different cases, you know, to familiarize them
mm-hmm.
with what, you know, could happen or would happen if you're going in on an investigation. And Tony takes them into the museum.
You're referring to the occult museum that you have there at your home, correct?
Yes, the occult museum that we have in our home. And that is all, everything it explained to them that is there. And from terrible cases to, you know, common cases. And then we go out for psychic photographs. And then we go to dinner. We talk all the time about the work in general, and it's been very, very successful for us because people are so pleased in being able to sit down with us and talk about the phenomena. Mm-hmm. And instead of looking at some of the shows that are that's going on right now that really shouldn't be. You know, I mean, people think that they're, you know, that what they're seeing there is how things should be, but it is not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more glamorized, would you say?
Beg pardon?
Is it? Do you feel these shows are glamorizing the paranormal in a way that
in certain
make it more entertainment?
They're glamorizing it in certain ways. In other ways, they are not explaining it, you know, what's really there. You know, and I don't know who these people are or what, you know, where they gained their insight or knowledge, but you know, and bringing closure is the most important aspect of going into these homes. The most important is bringing closure. When did you ever see any show that you're looking at now where there's closure being brought?
No, and that's
something too that I've thought for years watching these shows is why aren't we able to see, you know, this family now with closure? They've moved on. Things have settled in the house. The entities have been removed, and they're living normal lives. We never really get to see that part of it.
No, because there isn't that part of it.
It doesn't happen. You know, because I look at, you know, a lot of the paranormal groups that have formed all over the country. If you ask yourself, you know, what are you guys actually doing? You know, they'll go in and they investigate. You know, they go into the home. They take readings. They do EVPs. But what do they do with the information when they're done with it? You know, how does it help the people involved?
Exactly. Who is discerning what is in that home? You know, your EVPs and all, that isn't giving you all the answers.
Yeah.
You have to investigate a place. You have to spend time there. You just can't go there for an evening and say, oh yeah, this ghost's here, and leave.
See you later. Good luck.
Yeah. Well, sometimes that's how it seems.
Yeah. Now, in some cases, it can even increase the activity, correct?
Yes, it can. It can definitely increase the activity because they are not doing things in the right way. You know, they're not bringing any closure. And when they're going in there and just, I don't think anybody's discerning. I don't see anybody discerning in any of these cases.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sorry.
Maybe there are some that I don't mean to be so critical of all of them, but I don't see anything where they're educating the public.
Now, Lorraine, can you talk a little bit about the different types of spirits or hauntings that you come across, maybe the more common ones, and you probably get this question a lot, what do you think a ghost is? You know, some people I've spoken to recently of Catholic faith think that maybe they're souls that are in purgatory, and maybe this is their way of, their penance in a way that they have to do while they're here on earth. Do you have any
this is disembodied spirit of a once living person. That's what a ghost is.
Okay.
It's the disembodied spirit of a once living person. I don't think in that vein as you were just mentioned at all. You go in and you walk around the house. You can tell when you walk around the house. Sit on the beds of the people, and I will find out right away who it is that's the law of attraction, just by sitting on the bed to the vibrations of a certain person. There's just, I mean, you can go into a family home, but there's probably only one person that's the law of attraction in that case.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, they're all feeling the effects of the haunting. And then it's finding out, is this a human haunting or is this an inhuman haunting? So that is like if you're dealing with a human spirit, you can talk to that spirit. You can communicate with them and talk to them and help them to accept their death and to pass on correctly. But if you are dealing with something of an inhuman or a demonic thing, that you cannot. I don't try to communicate with the inhuman. But where my son-in-law and like Ed were concerned, you can command in the name of Jesus Christ for what is there to reveal itself. When or if it does, it's going to require that clergy be brought in to bring closure to that place.
Now, Lorraine,
if it's human, sometimes like having a mass said, a service, any kind of religious service be said for that spirit, if it's human, will help the spirit to accept its death and to pass on correctly.
Okay. Now, once it's been determined if that a haunting is diabolical, then what is the next step, and who determines that? Is it, let's say if they're of a Catholic faith. Now, I know that being of Catholic faith myself, that there are certain criteria that the church needs to go through before they decide that it valids any kind of an exorcism.
If an exorcism has to be performed, to get rid of what is there, that has to go to the clergy. The clergy has to go to the bishop, and there's permission. Oh yeah, that is nothing that you can do as a lay person, other than to get the help for them.
Okay.
Through their faith, you can do that.
Now, if there is a, are there ever any psychological tests that are done before you get to the exorcism part?
No, not psychological. No, when we go into a house, you can tell if there's psychological problems in the house.
But on a particular individual, let's say that, because a lot of times, from what I understand, is some of these people that are maybe experiencing symptoms of being possessed are maybe suffering some kind of psychological issues. Is that?
Oh well, if there's psychological issues, you know right away, and if it's something where. They act like they are. It's like a mental thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that that's just another way that the demonic can work into a family's home and life. But it's not a common thing for you know, the demonic to enter a home. There's, you know, and really the Catholic Church is really the only, well, the Anglican too, the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church are the ones that really have the power to get rid of, you know, what is there. But you can't do it. The layperson can't do it. If you're dealing with the demonic, if you are, not just a sick person that mm-hmm. might be in that house, mentally ill person might be in that house, you can discern that from the very beginning.
Now,
but if you're doing an investigation that requires, the clergy to come in, then you're going to know it right off the bat.
Okay. Now, if you're doing an investigation and you determine that it is demonic, and the family or the persons involved are of no particular faith, then what do you do?
That is difficult.
Okay. So you wouldn't bring in a priest at that time, or would that not work because of their?
I don't have, you know, how could I go up to a Catholic priest and ask him if he would come to this house and bless this house? But this family don't have faith. They don't belong to any church.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're lucky. Yeah. Sometimes you are lucky. But they don't have to do that. You know, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's very difficult. Very difficult. I know we've tried so hard to help families, and even though they, you know, don't have the clergy to help them, we've tried very, very hard to get them on some path that can help them to, you know, get rid of what is there, or to tolerate it to a certain extent until it is gone, you know, through prayer and things like that. We've done that. We have done that before.
Okay.
Now, Lorraine, I'd like to go back a little bit and talk a little bit more about having a spirit in a home and helping that spirit cross over in the proper way. Do you ever find that the spirit needs a little bit of coaching? The spirit needs some time where you're speaking with the particular spirit to let them know there's nothing to be afraid of, to cross over, and that you're there to help, and through prayer, this is something that you can do. Is that something you would practice?
Yes, I could. Yes, we can do. You like people can do that with knowledge and faith, but you must have faith.
Correct.
In what you're doing, but you can command in the name of Jesus Christ for what is there to leave and to go back to where it came from. As a lay person,
do you find that many spirits who are truly just frightened to cross over, and with your help, that it's easily done? It's just they've never had anybody reach out to them and assist them with this.
Yes, that's true. Yes, it is, and you can do that. You very, very easily can do that. But you have to be careful, you know, about it. And you may have to go back more than one time. And then you can have to say the family. Say the family consists of a husband and a wife and maybe two, you know, teenage children.
Right.
Well, what you can do is help them to deal with something that is there by telling them to envision themselves in what we call a Christ light of protection around
right.
us.
Right.
And that is something you can always do for your own protection, and then explain how it can be done for them to do it.
If
something like that happens.
Do you ever find that you'll have a spirit who is being held back by another spirit in the home from crossing over, and that you're able to in a way go in there and at least help the one spirit to cross, even though the other one is troublesome?
Yes. I have had cases like that, and where the one spirit will pass on, then it will give that other spirit the desire to move on.
Right, because there's really nothing there for that spirit to have power over or anything. It's just
there's no attraction anymore.
Well, that makes sense.
Lorraine, I want to go old school here and go all the way back to one of your earlier investigations. Well, actually, you and Ed began investigating in the mid-50s, is that correct?
In the early 50s.
The early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the case of Amityville took place in the 70s, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I know that we had some questions regarding the Amityville case. What are some of the most memorable times during that whole case that was going on?
It was terrible. The Amityville case affected our personal lives so badly. And when people say that, there was nothing there, or they didn't believe it, or their families moved in and they didn't experience anything, I'll tell you, the clergy that we worked with, the Catholic clergy that we worked with, you don't know how terribly bad they were affected. Very, very badly they were affected.
Ed and I
had times that we could have lost our life. And it was, don't ever let anybody tell you that the Amityville case was not a reality.
Did you notice the effects right away within your personal life, or did it have to take a little bit of time with working with this particular case before the effects were apparent?
Yes, we did. I have great faith in Padre Pio. Great faith in him, and I've always felt I'm protected, when I pray to him, and I have a relic of his,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm very fortunate to have things like this for protection. But it started right from the beginning, right from the very beginning. It started,
and you knew right from the very beginning that it was because of this case you were on.
Yes. It was,
I think you were very fortunate to recognize that. I'm sure that there are other people nowadays, especially involved in the paranormal, and they are working on cases. Things start happening in their personal life, and they probably don't even connect the two.
No. Well, I'll tell you one incident. We never talked about the Amityville case when we were on the road. Never talked about it on the road when we were driving.
You're talking to and from the home?
Or just when you were on the road, period?
When we're on the road, like when we're lecturing. And so this one day, we had a brand new car, and it was a Ford Elite. It was a beautiful car. And we were on a new part of the highway that was the 84 going into Pennsylvania. And we had been at a school and this night before, and we stayed in a hotel, and then we got on the road in the morning, and Ed said, "Oh, honey, you know what? I forgot my medal." And I said, "No, I took it." I said, "You had left it on the nightstand," and I took it. And I was like, there was a lot of little knots in it. and I was trying to get these knots all out. And finally I did, and I put it over Ed's head and put it down into his shirt. And with that, the car went totally out of control. Totally out of control. It went in big circles. And the only person that was witness to this was a truck driver that was with one of the big rigs.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably was about 500 feet, you know, behind us. And he's the only one that witnessed it. And the car went in these big circles. Then it went over an embankment. Ed talked right out loud to the Mother of God, like she was sitting there. He talked right out loud. The car stopped, like I would say, a yard before the rock cropping. It was all rock on the bottom. The car stopped. How could that car stop? It was going so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went over, turned over. Ed pushed me out of the car, and then, you know, he climbed over me to get out. And we looked up, way up onto the highway. It was way up high.
Uh-huh.
And there were two men now, and they said, "Is there anybody alive in that car?"
Wow.
We had to actually pinch ourselves. And one was a state police intelligence officer who happened to have his radio on in the car going the opposite direction. And that truck driver, he was talking about what he was seeing. And that state police intelligence officer was the second man that came. And they got the car up onto the highway. They had this big tow thing that came.
Mm-hmm.
And got the car up. Do you know that there was just a little dent in the side of that car? How could that be?
Oh, I have the chills just listening to this story. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is...
And that night, we had a lecture at a university that we had to cancel. We could not lecture. We were very shook up.
Now, Lorraine, this happened around the same time that the Amityville case was, you were involved in it, or was this after?
This was after the Amityville case.
Okay. Okay.
That's the kind of things happen to us.
Now, did anything happen to you during the case as far as anything following you home? You said that you were both very affected by it.
It did follow. It followed us home the very first night. In fact, Ed called. Ed and I both called clergy.
Mm-hmm.
And asked for their prayers. Why would we call that one thing? We didn't know. You know what? I didn't even know what state Amityville was in.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, how would I be, you know, that's, you know, optimistic about what could happen to us?
Yeah.
And, but why did Ed call all of these researchers, three men of science, plus these other researchers, and to go in that house with us? Why? We didn't even know anything about the house.
Hmm.
Why did we react to it like that? We had been out walking in the woods. I mean, we were... It was a beautiful day, and we just went out for a long walk in the woods. So we were really calm, and then came home, and we got that call. And that was George Lutz that called.
So that was George being the it was George and Kat there, correct? Okay. Now, Lorraine, how close was the movie that was made to the actual events?
It was terrible. The movie was absolutely terrible.
They usually are.
So yeah. So were you consulted on anything?
No, on the movie.
Where did they get all their information? Do you know?
From the news, and they didn't get it right at all. Not at all. It was just from the news reports.
How long do you think...
Did you see the Amityville movie?
Yes.
A long time ago. You know, Lorraine, how long do you think that entity was a part of that property? Do you think it was prior to the murders? Hundreds of years?
It went way back to Indian time.
Wow.
Yes, it went way back, that property.
No.
And then the first house that was there was moved, again, this big home was built there.
Did that? Do you know if the first house had any issues?
It seemed to, from the background that we had, that we were able to research.
So this was something that had been building and building, gaining strength, power until those horrible murders.
Now, Lorraine,
who would want to, for one thing, who would want to move into a home where a whole family was killed? You know, who would want to? I never got an answer to that.
Now, did the Lutzes know that the murder had taken place?
Yes.
Okay.
And George said that the dead can never help them. Never heard it.
Mm. Now, Lorraine, we had a comment on our Facebook page asking you to address, if you could, the author Stephen Roxanne Kaplan, who characterized the whole Amityville as a conspiracy or a hoax.
Well, if they knew Kaplan, the man had. He was almost mental about it. In fact, George Lutz wouldn't even allow him to go in the house. And he got really teed off about it. The Amityville home was one of the worst cases we ever worked on, and that's in our career.
Okay. We have a few questions on our Facebook page that I wanted to go over with you here. And they're kind of all over the place, so let me go with the first one. It says, some people will burn sage to cleanse a house. Some people say that it can be dangerous if not done correctly. Is there any truth to this?
Yes, there is truth to that.
Can you explain that?
Yes, there are people, you know, if you have the clergy coming in, and your blessing, you know, you have to bless him with this, doing it that way with the sage might be all right, but in itself it is not.
Okay, so why?
What are they doing? They're not doing anything that's going to bring closure.
So in other words, they're just burning it to burn it, but it's not going to bring any closure.
No. I mean, take an individual family being here. Some families would be allergic to the smoke. Mm-hmm. Some families would not. That's about how the help that you would get.
Okay. The difference, here's another one, says the difference between telling a spirit to leave in the name of God, can the difference between telling the spirit to leave in the name of God and asking it to leave be misunderstood as a challenge?
You command in the name of Jesus Christ for what is there to reveal itself. You don't ask questions of the spirit.
So if you're asking it to reveal itself, what are you exactly asking? Are you asking for it to prove something, to do something?
No,
wouldn't that be a challenge?
You're commanding it to leave and go back to where it came from in the name of Jesus Christ.
Okay, and that wouldn't be confused as a challenge, is I guess what they're asking.
No. Okay. Definitely not.
Okay. Lorraine, what is your take on having, having cards read or having psychic readings? Will that open you up to anything negative?
Definitely.
Yes.
I don't even want to get into that. Why would people go and pay money to have these readings like that? That's really opening doors.
Okay. So that's a no-no in your book.
Mm-hmm. No-no in my book.
Okay. I have a question from last question from Stephanie. I have a question from Lynn. This one says, what causes a person that passes to become a demon versus a friendly spirit? Does the life they lead here on earth determine their fate?
A demon and a person are two different things. The spirit that didn't pass over correctly is a human spirit. It cannot be a demon.
Yeah, so a person cannot be, if a person dies, they cannot turn into a demon.
They can't turn into a demon.
Okay. I have another one from a Jamie.
A demon is a body. Spirit, it's not.
A fallen angel, correct?
Yes.
So a person could not be that if they
no,
die. Okay.
A person wouldn't be that.
Yeah, okay. I have a question from Jamie. It says, hi, Lorraine. My grandfather, mother, and I have all seen the same spirit. They call him the Watcher. My grandfather saw him first into his adulthood when the spirit left him to be with my mom. I'm sorry, then the spirit left him to be with my mom, then left her when she was 17 after she asked him to, and then showed himself to me when I was a child. Have you ever heard of a haunting like this? Also,
yes.
Also, my grandfather.
That's
and
rare.
Her,
that is rare words things in a family like that.
That is what? I'm sorry.
That's rare where it will stay in a family like
okay.
that.
But you have heard of that?
Yes.
Okay. And we have a question about the your cult museum
mm-hmm.
downstairs. Do you ever have anything unusual that that happens down there?
It's blessed many times. You have no idea how many times it has to be blessed. You'd have to challenge it. And anybody that we would be taking in there, we would never, never, ever allow that to happen.
Okay, so you're saying in order for activity to kick up down there, somebody
yeah,
would have to
challenge.
Go in. Someone have to go in and challenge it in order for
yes.
it to. Okay, and then last time we spoke, you talked a lot about giving things power by giving them recognition.
Recognition. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. Can something have can an object or something have something attached to it, and it lie dormant with one person, and then another person gets a hold of it, and let's say like the case of the Raggedy Ann doll that you were talking to us about last time, they give it recognition and they treat it like a kid, and
mm-hmm.
it can it just manifest itself? I mean, did it already have to be there in order for it to
no.
begin, or can it just
no. You know, with what people do, you know, people open doors. You know, if there was nothing of a demonic nature there, maybe an inhuman spirit, and if you could get it to, the clergy to bless the house,
mm-hmm.
it would be all right. But you have to be very, very careful if you're dealing with an inhuman spirit.
Okay.
I have a question about the clergy. After he goes to a home and removes the demonic spirit, where does that demonic spirit go?
Because that's where it came from.
And then
that's what they do. You command in the name of Jesus Christ for it to leave and go back to where it came from.
And then let's say many years later the clergy passes away. Is there any chances with the passing that this spirit can come back now? That,
no. Okay. No. It would have to have recognition to come back.
Okay.
Okay, great. Well, Lorraine, are there any upcoming projects or events that you're working on that you want to tell us about?
The warrenology is something that has just gone over. People are coming from all older states to these warrenology.
Now, the warrenology, just to let everyone...
They're gaining a lot of knowledge in one evening.
Now, the warrenology, just to explain to everybody exactly what that is, it's an evening at your home, correct?
It starts at our home, where they get to see all this video, taken in homes where we have been working, spirits. There's many, ghostly spirits that we're showing, and we show cases of possession and things like that, and how people are affected. And then they go into the museum, and everything that's in that museum is explaining every solitary thing that is in there, so they can understand, how these things, how active these things mm-hmm. could be. But they're always under control because of the fact that there's always clergy that are blessing. And then we go out to take some psychic photographs. People love to get psychic photographs.
Now, what exactly are psychic photographs? Are they, do you take them out to a place where they're likely to get something on film?
Mm-hmm. Yes, where it would be active, and where that they could, get psychic photographs. And then we go for dinner. And so it starts at 6, and it's over at 11.
Okay, so they get to spend those hours with you and Tony, right?
Yes.
And they get to ask questions. It's pretty intimate, I would guess, right?
Yeah, they can go online. They can go on warrens.net.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's the warrens.net, and it's the New England Society for Psychic Research, mm-hmm. and there's information on there if any of our listeners would like to check that out. Actually, I was actually scheduled to attend that last year, and my whole story about not being able to make
you
it out.
Your surgery.
Yeah, I had a surgery scheduled a couple of days before, and I had to cancel. So, I'm looking to make it out there sometime soon. But it's always a pleasure to speak with you, and we thank you so much just for giving us some of your time tonight and being on the Haunted Orange Paranormal Podcast.
Lorraine, and I want to say thank you personally. You are somebody who I've always admired, and I love the beautiful standards that you've set for yourself in your life and all the help you've offered so many people in dedicating your life to this. I thank you for that, and it was an absolute pleasure this evening.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. I really, really very much enjoyed being with you both.
Thank you, Lorraine. And so we'll be looking for you, because I know you keep yourself very busy. Every time I call, you're either out somewhere on investigation or... Or it's you keep on going and going, and that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm afraid to slow down. I just keep on going. Yes.
Well, you're blessed with the energy, that's for sure.
Yes, that's for sure.
Well, thank you.
Thank
you, Lorraine, so much again for joining us tonight, and God bless. And we will definitely talk to you soon.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.